Radio Prague News.
The Czech capital Prague and the town of Kralupy nad Vltavou have held emergency exercises to gauge rescue crews' response to potential terrorist attacks. A DNA sample has linked a suspect to the murder of TV Nova technician Michal Velišek, and footballer Karel Boborský, until recently captain of the First Division's Sparta Prague, has been officially struck from the club's A-team list. The Czech capital Prague and the town of Kralupy nad Vltavou held emergency rescue exercises in the early hours of Friday morning to measure rescue crews' response in the event of successful terrorist attacks. At 1 a.m. in the morning, crews, including medics and firefighters in anti-chemical gear, arrived at the scene of a simulated attack at Prague's Náměstí Republiky metro station, while other rescue crews went into action at the scene of a simulated suicide bombing at Prague's Holešovice train station. The town of Kralupy, north of Prague, also held exercises. Newly named police president Vladislav Husák has said he is satisfied with rescue workers' response, the first crews arriving at scenes within minutes. The anti-terrorist exercises involving hundreds of specialists and volunteers were the largest of their kind in the Czech Republic's history. Police have revealed that DNA analysis has confirmed suspect David Lubina's involvement in the murder of a TV technician. Last week, TV Nova editor Michal Velišek was shot and killed in Prague after intervening on a woman's behalf. The woman was being threatened by Mr. Lubina near Prague's Charles Square. Lubina, who has a history of psychological problems, shot Mr. Velišek twice without warning before escaping the scene. Police have been unable to track him down so far. Interior Minister František Bublan has addressed the case of fugitive millionaire Radovan Krejčíř, saying on Thursday that it was 99% certain Mr. Krejčíř was no longer a Czech citizen. The news comes after the ministry studied new documents at its disposal. Mr. Krejčíř, who is wanted for tax fraud and conspiracy to murder in the Czech Republic, escaped to the Seychelles in midsummer, but obtained citizenship earlier, in 1996. Until now, the Czech Republic had been looking into possibilities for Krejčíř's extradition. And Czech footballer Karel Poborský, until recently captain of the First Division's Sparta Prague, has been officially struck from the club's A-team list. Sparta's management reached the decision after the star midfielder publicly criticized the team's coach. The club said it respected Mr. Poborský's talents, but made clear it would not tolerate such behavior. The 33-year-old Poborský is now set to train individually. I'm Jan Wellinger. That's the news. This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. I'm Jan Wellinger. Today, another look at the controversial privatization of the Czech oil and gas giant Unipetrol. We'll be talking to John Connolly, the Irish thriller writer whose latest book, The Black Angel, takes inspiration from Czech history, and find out about a new documentary on the famous Czech entrepreneur Tomáš Baťa. Both the Czech and Polish parliaments were this week debating the controversial privatization of the Czech oil and gas giant Unipetrol to Poland's PKN Orlen. Critics claim that PKN acquired a controlling stake in Unipetrol earlier this year, only after bribes were paid to senior Czech government officials, a charge they flatly deny. Rob Cameron spoke to analyst Jiří Pehe.
Any privatization deal in any post-communist country always raises a lot of questions, and perhaps it is more a cultural problem or problem of political culture than anything else. People simply do not trust politicians, and they suspect that any such privatization deal must be accompanied by corruption.
And this is 15 years, though, after the fall of communism, and yet still the general perception is that this region is beset by the kind of big-scale corruption that accompanies large-scale privatization projects such as Unipetrol.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, this is, of course, not only a legacy of the communist system, but also of the first years of building a market economy. during which politicians in Eastern Europe did not pay much attention to the rule of law and creating proper legal frameworks for the privatization deals. Transparency was lacking or non-existent. And today, I think that it's all coming back, at least in the form of a lack of confidence on the part of the public. I think that it will take some time before people start believing that any big privatization deal can be actually clean and transparent, and there will be no accusations of corruption, which we basically see in media in case of every large privatization deal.
Some fairly serious accusations were levelled at a number of people in this country and in Poland, chief among them the former Prime Minister Stanisław Gross. What effect do you think the Unipetrol scandal is going to have, say, on the ruling Social Democrats in this country?
So far, the Unipetrol scandal doesn't seem to have any influence on the Social Democratic Party, because the popularity of the party certainly has not dropped in the latest opinion polls. It seems that people are, on the one hand, suspicious of what might have happened during the privatization process, but at the same time, they also understand that in many cases, such deals are used for political infighting and for accusations or political scandalizing, which other political parties, other political actors are engaged in.
Right, so it's still very, very murky business, politics, business, and indeed privatization in Central Europe.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, it is all entangled, and unfortunately, post-communist media are not playing really a very helpful role in all of this. Very often, it seems to me, they are manipulated by various political actors and various political forces, and very skillfully used. And it is very easy to launch a major scandal in the Czech Republic or any post-communist country when there is a big privatization deal, because all we have to do is basically to create suspicion and launch charges that are very difficult to substantiate, but then it all lives its own life simply because people tend to believe that there must have been some corruption.
Analyst Jiří Pehe there, speaking to Radio Prague's Rob Cameron. Now, fans of crime fiction will probably already be familiar with the books of Irish thriller writer John Connolly, the best-selling author whose books blend the macabre and the supernatural. Over a 5-book series, Connolly's character, the private eye Charlie Parker, has come up against some pretty nasty individuals, and he again faces difficult tests in Connolly's newest book, The Black Angel. Part of the thriller is set in the Czech Republic, and was inspired by a famous ossuary, a bone chapel, in the town of Sedlec. I met with John Connolly this week and asked him about his feelings about Sedlec, as well as Prague.
This is probably one of the few cities in Europe, apart from Dublin, that I could see myself living in, since we're here talking in Prague. I came here when I was much younger. I came here at the beginning of the 1990s. And it was quite different. And I was fascinated by its history. And history has played a big part in the Parker books. They're very much concerned about the past and the impact of the past upon the present. And a few years ago, I was reading a newspaper article, one of those Sunday supplement magazines, the colour magazines. And there was a feature on Sedlec, which is the ossuary beside Cutna Hora. And I just thought that the pictures were fascinating. These remains of about 40,000 human beings, I think, and furnished literally in that they've been made into chandeliers and monstrances, and they've been decorated in chains on the ceiling of the chapel. Dating, I think the beginnings were probably about the 16th century. There are 4 freestanding bone pyramids, and then later additions made in the 18th and 19th centuries. And I thought it was fascinating. Writers are very magpie-ish, and that had stuck with me. And when I began writing The Black Angel, I wanted a kind of symbol or metaphor that would run through the books, and Sedlec became it, reminding people that no matter how bad or good this life will be, it will pass.
John Connolly's detective Charlie Parker once again has his work cut out for him. As readers will know, the writer always sets his character rather difficult tasks. I asked John how, over 5 novels, Parker had come through.
As the books have gone on, he's realised kind of duty towards others, I think, and he realises that, you know, he wants to rebuild his life, that there is a way of overcoming this. Either you can become mired in bitterness and anger and become the very thing that you hate, or you can try and achieve something, and you can try and say, I won't let this destroy me. And he doesn't always succeed. But he's become more complex, I think, as the books have gone on, and a little bit more likable.
So if you're interested in The Black Angel, you can look it up at johnconnollybooks.com, where you'll also find a link to that ossuary, the Bone Chapel in Sedlec, here in the Czech Republic. Cabarets, masked balls, dancing halls, and high society events. Life was fun for the young social elite in the roaring 1920s, a time of abandonment and elegance in the years before the Great Depression. Between 1900 and 1930, Prague was gradually transformed from a local provincial town in the Austro-Hungarian Empire into a self-confident modern metropolis. An exhibition of picture posters, which has just opened at the Municipal House in Prague, offers unique evidence of this change. Daniela Lazarova has more.
Never Before Seen in Prague is the name given to a collection of entertainment posters dating back to the beginning of the 20th century. The posters, loaned by the Museum of Decorative Arts in Prague, advertise popular haunts of the day, among them the Alhambra Club, the Sanssouci Cabaret, the American Dancing Hall, or the Chapeau Rouge. Each picture poster is a work of art, transporting visitors to a time of high glamour when the entertainment industry was booming and the young social elite embraced the carpe diem philosophy. Cancan, boas, powder and patches, silk dresses and coming out balls. The posters reflect a time of decadence and joie de vivre, which many people today would love to get a taste of. The poster exhibition at the Municipal House gives you a glimpse of that life. The curator of the exhibition, Petr Štembera, picked the cream of the crop from the Museum of Decorative Arts, which boasts the largest collection of period posters in the Czech Republic. They date from the very first picture poster made in 1900 to 1930.
Já mám ráda takový ty veliký z těch 20. let, to je vlastně opravdu.
My own favorites are posters from the 20s. They portray what I call the elegance of the pre-war republic. We had a 1920s dress exhibition here recently, which also reflected that quality strongly. It is an elegance that we cannot hope to match in the present day. The 20s posters have a magic quality that's hard to put your finger on, but it's there. They are really fantastic.
The exhibition also features film posters and small mementos of the time, a young lady's dance card, period evening wear, and black and white photographs. It is open at the Municipal House until the end of the year. So if you'd like to get a feel of the good old days before the Great Depression, pop in to see it. You'll find you can buy an English-Czech catalogue containing many of the posters on show.
Our thanks to Daniela Lazarova for that story. Kind of makes you feel like you were there. Now we turn to all the latest business news. I'm joined in the studio by Brian Kennedy for that.
Thanks, Jan. Three media firms have entered talks to buy a controlling stake in TV Prima, the second largest Czech commercial station. Unconfirmed media reports say the deal should fetch over $200 million, depending on the size of the stake, and the likely buyer is the Modern Times Group of Sweden, a major broadcaster in Scandinavia, Russia, the Baltic States, and Hungary. Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation and Germany's RTL Group are also reported to have been in the running. In related news, the U.S. media group Central European Media Enterprises, or CME, announced it has bought the Czech television station Galaxy Sport for $119 million. CME already owns TV Nova, the largest Czech commercial station.
The European Investment Bank will lend the Czech Republic 4 billion crowns towards the construction of a new motorway from Prague to the northern border with Germany. The new four-lane road will provide the final 23 kilometers of missing motorway between Prague and the German city of Dresden, along the pan-European corridor connecting Berlin to Istanbul. Once completed, the motorway is expected to greatly lessen the amount of traffic into the Czech capital, as international transporters will have an alternative, faster route to choose from.
The Czech government approved a plan this week to buy military trucks worth some $207 million from a unit of the U.S. company TEDx. The contract is for just under 1,000 all-terrain trucks made by the Czech TEDx daughter company Tatra. Securing the deal would give a major boost to the Czech truck maker, which was nearly bankrupt before the takeover by the U.S. company in October 2003.
Airlines will begin paying more to fly over Czech airspace as of 2006 due to increased traffic and to cover the cost of constructing a new air traffic controlling center near Prague. Airlines now pay 26.4 euros per flight, the second lowest rate in Europe. The flyover price for the Czech Republic could rise by as much as 30% next year, which would still be less than the EU average of 45 euros.
And finally, the Czech-based drugs maker Zentiva has bought a controlling stake of 51% in one of Romania's biggest generic drug firms. Zentiva, controlled by the private equity firm Warburg Pincus, reportedly paid $200 million for the stake in Sicomed and intends to buy out other shareholders.
Just a reminder, you are, of course, listening to Radio Prague, where it's now time for our final feature this week. It's Colleen O'Connor with the arts.
To Thomas Barta and the future.
The sound of British directors Nina Pope and Karen Guthrie introducing their film Batcheville, We Are Not Afraid of the Future. This road movie, exploring the legacy of the legendary Czech entrepreneur Tomáš Bača, was a big hit at the Edinburgh International Film Festival last month. The film charts a bus journey made by former workers of two defunct Bača factories in the British city of Zlín, where the vast Bača shoemaking empire was first founded in 1894. Inspired by Henry Ford, Tomáš Bača is famous for introducing extremely profitable conveyor systems to shoemaking. These revolutionized the footwear industry and made Bača a fortune. Tomáš Bača, however, was more than just a money-spinning industrialist. He was also a philanthropist who tried to use the money he made from his business to improve the place where it operated. Starting with his hometown of Zlín, he built his employees houses and other amenities such as cinemas and hotels. He then repeated this process in every place where his rapidly expanding empire set up a new operation. Nina Pope says her and fellow filmmaker Karen Guthrie's interest in Bača was awakened when they were commissioned to do a work of art on the town of East Tilbury in England. This small community on the Thames River was home to a Bača shoe plant for most of the 20th century. Like Zlín, many of the town's facilities had been built by the footwear company in accordance with the utopian ideals of Tomáš Bača.
As soon as we went to the town, we realised that in effect East Tilbury is the Bača factory and the Bača community there. And so our interest in Bača was kind of sparked by visiting East Tilbury. And when I found out that East Tilbury was based on Zlín, I became obsessed with this idea of a kind of little mini part of the Czech Republic on the Thames. And almost quite flippantly, I had the idea that it would be nice to take people on a trip there to see where their village had originated. And once we'd had the idea of making this bus trip, the whole thing kind of snowballed from there, basically.
By offering a free trip by coach to Zlín, Guthrie and Pope managed to persuade 30 former Bača workers to take part in the film and make the journey to Moravia. As Nina Pope explains, the trip in many ways was a timely one, as it helped revive memories of the connections between East Tilbury and Zlín, which were in danger of being eroded by the passage of time.
When East Tilbury was first established, Czechs came over from Zlín to East Tilbury to set it up. And so until very recently, there were quite a lot of Czechs living in East Tilbury, but we're almost at the sort of edge of their living memory. So a lot of the original Czechs who came over have died in the last sort of 5 years. And in effect, the sort of original memory of Zlín has just about sort of died out in East Tilbury. So it was an interesting time for them to visit because for many people, they'd never had a chance to go there or to see it. And a lot of their ideas of Zlín were based on black and white photos from the 20s and 30s that people had originally brought over when they first came to Britain.
While the workers of East Tilbury and Maryport were happy to finally see Zlín with their own eyes, Nina Pope says they were also delighted by the warm reception they got from the people of Tomáš Bača's hometown.
We had a really fantastically positive response. We also went to the Shoe Museum in Zlín and had a fantastic tour there. And the woman that runs that was a really great host. And yeah, generally, everybody in Zlín responded very positively. And it was really delightful to see them meeting people from East Tilbury and Maryport.
Besides making regular references to the progressive slogans of Tomáš Bača, Pope and Guthrie also appear in Bačaville as travel guides for the workers on the bus, wearing uniforms inspired by a Bača hostess costume from the 1950s. Nina Pope says this is meant as a light-hearted tribute to the aesthetic legacy of the Czech tycoon.
Bača, as well as making shoes, has this amazing design legacy. And in a way, we wanted the film to reflect some of the aesthetic qualities of the fantastic design that he originated. And hopefully the film sort of reflects that richness.
Although in many ways, Bačaville celebrates the life and legacy of Tomáš Bača, the film is also tinged with sadness. The harsh realities of a global economy have seen both of Bača's UK factories close in recent years. In visiting Zlín, the now unemployed Bača workers are reminded of what they have lost at home. Nevertheless, as these excerpts from the film illustrate, many of the workers found the trip to be an uplifting experience, and there was no sense of resentment among them towards Tomáš Bača.
When we were at Tomáš Bača house, we met some other retired ex-Bača employees, fellow office workers from Zlín, and it was just like that you felt as though you already knew them. And they really welcomed us and wanted us to be part of them. And that was really nice.
We all loved working at Bača. And if it was reopened now, I presume 9 out of 10 would go back.
Most people in his position are just in to make the money, but he did care about the people and the workforce and what he did give back for what they did for him. Which is unusual.
I mean, I didn't realise how big Mr. Bača was. Did you? I didn't realise how big he was. And it just brought home to us how important a man he was and his philosophy on life. If everybody could take a leaf out of his book, they wouldn't live a bad life at all.
2 and 6, 26.
Can we all try, please? R-A-O once more.
There's a definite spell being woven around people by being on this trip.
Bačaville has yet to find a Czech distributor, but the directors are holding talks with the European Cultural Foundation with a view to producing a subtitle version that could be released in this country. As Nina Pope says, the film might well be an eye-opener for many Czechs who may not be aware of the extent of Tomáš Bača's legacy around the world.
I think it should be very interesting for Czechs, if they've been to Zlín but they don't know about Bača in other parts of the world, to see what he built in the UK and how visually similar East Tilbury is to Zlín is very interesting. But also to consider that this is only one of the many countries that he in effect exported the Bača industry to. I think that's a sort of amazing heritage that he's generated that the Czech Republic should be very proud of.
Laid-back music ends the arts with Colleen O'Connor and just about brings us to the end of today's program. But before we go, I'd like to remind you that you can contact us here at Radio Prague if you have any questions or comments on any of our shows. You can contact us by either writing by sending an email, that's english@radio.cz, or by sending an old-fashioned letter. Our address is Radio Prague, Vinohradská 12, 12099 to the Czech Republic. Also, if you'd like to hear any of the stories you've heard or read them in text on our webpage, that address is www.radio.cz/en. I'm Jan Wellinger. For all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening and have a wonderful weekend. Thank you.